ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Page 20, the fourth of the four fundamental points. True sages recognize and honor an exalted devotee as soon as they see him. They show the exalted devotee respect regardless of his material bodily situation. As for the devotee, he is obliged to accept a bona fide spiritual master from amongst the saints and sages in order to solve the problems of life and understand the science of transcendence. Especially one who is near death should attach himself to a great saint. Only a truly saintly person can turn any place into a pilgrimage spot. Getting the association and help of a saintly person and taking his spiritual direction for the remainder of one's life means that one has obtained the direct help of the Lord himself. Okay, so he's bringing out is that the respect for the devotees is there. The ability to understand who is a devotee and that one connects oneself to the devotees, and someone who is able to do that, that is considered the Lord's mercy. That's something special. Right? It's not something ordinary. Because for Krishna, the devotees are what's actually important. It means our appreciation for Krishna is actually shown through our appreciation of the devotees. When we don't appreciate the devotees, Krishna can't be very pleased because he's going to perform his activities with the devotees. We don't like the devotees, then how are we going to like his pastimes, right? Right? We say we want to assist or enter into the Lord's pastimes, but the problem with doing that is it's full of devotees. I mean, chock-a-block. You know, there's no, don't, you know, it's like here, how you say, you want to do a service. So it's very common that, especially the Westerners, that one person wants to do everything, right? You're going to have a Rath Yatra, so one person does everything. And it's nice, it comes off very well, but you generally see it was a grand thing, the guests and everything loved it, but the details of those who were behind the scenes, it was not nice. Because one person's trying to run it. Then you have something like you see the Pandavas, the Rajasuya sacrifice, then even though each one of them could have run it themselves, they would take a small part, you know, important, and they would do it nicely. One could say, oh, it's so small. Bhima would take just the kitchen. Oh, it's a big deal with the kitchen. Point is you have kings from all over the world that have personal cooks that cook for them, and they expect a certain standard of food, right? They're royalty. And so you need somebody of that stature who could arrange it for them, right? Or Krishna would take the shoes. You could say, well, what's the big deal taking shoes? Why do you need, you know, God to take the shoes? You ever try to keep track of shoes of thousands of kshatriyas? Right? So, you know, like that. Or Sahadeva and Nakula, then they would just usher the people in where they would sit. What's the big deal? That's an usher. You just get a new bhakta to do that, right? So far what I've mentioned is, okay, the kitchen thing, you get somebody who's not who prominent. But the shoes and the ushers, hey, that you just get new bhaktas, right? But now, each king, you have to know their status, their position, their what level they're at. And then who can sit with who? You have to know, okay, if you have 2,000 kshatriyas coming, they had more. You have to know who's allies with who, who's not, who's relative of who, who's not, who's enemies of who, who's not. Because if you sit them down next to each other, you've got a problem. And if there's a problem, it's your fault, not their fault. You should have known that these two kings are inimical. Right? And you sit them next to each other, it's your fault. So, like that, then It's important. So we're making this is because Rupa Goswami mentions that in Radha and Krishna's pastimes, when they're just together, just themselves with Radharani and her in the eight shakis, They got 5,000 to 6,000 maidservants. Right? And we've read the passage. It's a little kunj, right? Kunj is what, maybe this big here? This little sitting area here, not that big. 5,000 to 6,000 people arranging that. Right? So we're just putting it out now. If you don't like being with people, you like to do everything yourself, then going back to Godhead is definitely not the right place for you. Actually, you're going to have a problem. Even in the Brahman, it's chock-a-block with living entities. It's just packed. Right? Okay, you go hide in the Garbhodak mud. Oh, no. Millions of Buddhists down there. You could try out in the middle of the Gobi Desert. I've heard there's not a lot of people out there. But you will have to share it with a few, how do you say? You know, highway robbers. Siberia, northern parts, I think, are pretty barren. Northern, you know, steppes are pretty barren. If you're on the Russian side, if you're on the American side, then there's all those Inuits out there, you know. So that'll be a problem. It's just, you understand? It's that, so the ability to appreciate and work with devotees, that's what's important to Krishna. Otherwise, why would he have made it like this? You know? Why would he have made it so full? Because that's the way Krishna likes it. He doesn't like empty places. He doesn't like, you know, places that look like they're under curfew. You know? Like that. That's one of the... You've been in India a while, and then you go back to the West, you always wonder, why is the place always under curfew? You know? Why there's no one out on the street? I remember sitting in Perth, I think it was, you know? Stand on the corner, and every 5 to 10 minutes, a person walks by, or a car drives by. You know? So it's... So, whole thing is that the devotee, they make everything auspicious, but we have to be able to recognize who's a devotee. We can say, yes, yes, a devotee will do that, but I don't see any. But we also have to remember that Sukadeva Goswami walked around, you know, the earth, and only those sages noticed who he was. Nobody else noticed. So one should not be too proud. One should never be proud of oneself that one looks around and doesn't find any senior devotees to appreciate. You can put it down on the top of your list. That means you don't have enough piety or intelligence to understand what is a devotee. Right? That's all. So it's that simple. Because here it says, true sages recognize and honor an exalted devotee. And you can say yes, and not, but the point is they could recognize him. Right? Krishna was eating with his left hand. Lord Brahma couldn't tell he was God. Right? So Brahma confidently pulled his tricks, thinking that I'm Brahma. I know all the rules. This guy's not following the rules, but some people say he's God, so I'm going to prove that he's not. I'm going to have some fun. Does that make sense? That's Brahma. So, that's the whole point. That's why the fifth verse is given in the Upadeshamrita. They look funny. Don't act normal. And so, of course, they can't be according to our Hollywood idea of, you know, what's a hero or what's a sadhu, or then they couldn't be. Right? Means a lot of these movies and stories, if what the person actually looked like, they got a person to play that role, I don't know if anybody'd watch the movie. You know? You got to get this fabulously beautiful woman or handsome man, and then they play the part. Then we watch the movie. Does that make sense? But if they actually looked what they looked like, I mean, of course, if it was an art film, then you'd probably get away with it. But art films generally aren't popular. Does that make sense? It's natural, of course, that extreme piety results in beauty. But it doesn't always. Does that make sense? So this thing, if it's not 100% pure, then it's not pure at all. Then that's okay if you're in the spiritual world. But if you'll notice that we're not. Right? And until you have prema, you're not getting out of here. So, unfortunately, even pure isn't good enough. You have no blemish, no attachment to the material world. It's not enough to get you into the spiritual world. You have to have a love for Krishna and his devotees. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you know, it's the pot calling the kettle black. So we're pointing out someone else's fault when we have faults ourselves. Because if we didn't, then either, you know, we're sorry, we shouldn't make these comments, you're an avatar that's descended here to save us, and you're just playing the part of an ordinary person. Or you're here because there's reasons you're here. You have attachments and impurities that are the reason you're here. Right? Lord Chaitanya was even making the point that I'm so fallen and I'm so useless because if I really had love for Krishna, I wouldn't still be here. I would have died out of separation. Right? Isn't it? Lakshmi Priya died. Lord Chaitanya went to Bangladesh, I think, what, 2 months, was it? 2 months. She died of separation. It was arranged that it was a snake bite, but it was a snake bite of separation. That's love. Right? Ramachandra's father died when he left for the forest. Okay? So we're not dead yet. So then we can understand that maybe we're not quite that advanced as we may think we are. Okay? So all I'm saying is, therefore, we shouldn't be pointing out the faults of someone else. That's easy. To be able to appreciate the qualities of devotees, that's actually what's difficult, because that takes intelligence. That takes character. To find fault, that any low-class, person with personal agendas, envious, jealous, nasty, they're the best. Right? If you think of a person who, it doesn't matter what the time, place, and circumstance, and no matter what you're doing, there's a fault in it. Think about it. Is that person, would they be called socially a nice person? Think about it. Someone who, no matter what's going on, they find the fault. You know what I'm saying? So it's not special. It makes you feel special that I found this out, I found that out, I'm so together, I'm on top of everything. No, it just means you're jealous of anyone and everything. And by your false ego, you're exercising your self-appointed, you know, generalissimo of, you know, pointing out everybody's faults. But the point is your government is not recognized by God. And he's the one that matters. So we have to be very, very careful. So here then we see is that, you know, winding up here is that the devotee will fix his mind on Krishna. In doing that, he'll surround himself with devotees. Right? Then, because of their, natural disinterest in the material world, but because they're dealing in the society of devotees, they'll deal very nicely. The culture will be very good, but not for any purpose of their own. Then, they are working for the benefit of others, trying to help others, progress in their spiritual life, and they themselves can recognize who are devotees that they can take benefit from their association, and someone who is able to appreciate that and get that, they're very special. Right? Any questions on this chapter there? No? Right, so this whole thing of the devotee is being brought out is that you can't underestimate the importance and need of devotees. A Brahmin's main quality means we'll say it's this, that, and the other thing. Always pure, he's this, he's that. But actually, in the Mahabharata, it states that the main quality that sets a Brahmin aside from the other varnas is his ability to forgive. So if you can't forgive, stand too strongly on your brahminical position. As a devotee, you're automatically a Brahmin. You may be doing brahminical activities. But if you can't forgive, then you're missing out on your actual main duty. You know? As far as character goes. As far as service goes, then studying, teaching, that's your primary duty. Does that make some sense? So forgiveness. So if we can't forgive, how will we get out of here? Because forgiveness, we always have to remember, is based on justice. And justice happens here. They got courts here, they got punishment here, all that. They don't have that in the spiritual world. Right? So if justice, material justice, is so important, you also still won't like the spiritual world. Not only will it be packed with people doing very menial, small activities, but there's no justice system there. You know what I'm saying? So unattractive. Does that make sense? So like that. Then the Parishishtam appendix. So here it mentions two items of special interest. Here it mentioned Bhakti Vaibhav, that was from before, because technically speaking, that this is a study of Bhagavatam. And then if in the future, then once it's all finished and all that, then it'll be, you know, we'll work on converting it to that. Okay, then Prabhupada quotes these two verses often, the one that we've used all the time. There's been like the theme through this whole verse. O trustworthy Brahmins, I now ask you about my immediate duty. Please offer proper deliberation. Tell me of the unalloyed duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically of those who are just about to die. So it's said that Prabhupada would quote these a lot. Then also, O powerful Brahmana, it is said that you hardly stay in the houses of men long enough to milk a cow. In other words, just enough to discuss a little bit, give something, not really get involved in the life, because otherwise what happens is that the intelligence, very quickly you can understand what should be done and what shouldn't be done very quickly. But the general thing is there's not, if it's possible, one wants to involve others in this process in your own personal emotional experience. Does that make sense? This person said this. Okay, so then, but the thing is, does it matter that that person said or not? They can say all they want, that's their problem. You're doing what you should do, you know you should be doing it, what do you care if they talk? Right? Finished. Isn't it? But there's the tendency, oh, you don't understand. Unfortunately, understand, this is a euphemism or a spin doctoring on the emotional feelings that I am going through right now, you yourself are not experiencing, so therefore you don't actually understand what's going on. Right? Because it's a matter of my ego has been bruised because of this, so until you feel the same thing I'm feeling, or at least you appreciate what I'm feeling and support that it's okay and I'm right and the other person's wrong, then you really don't, you know, there's no communing here, right? But the word used is understand, which infers intelligence, but it's purely an emotional thing. Right? So it said, one should say, you don't feel what I'm feeling. But if we say that, we might say, well, why should I feel, or why should you even be feeling it? Right? So it will be attacked by the intelligence. So, therefore, the best defense is offense, so to stop any intellectual attack on our emotions, therefore we throw out an intellectual smoke screen in front to say you don't understand. That makes sense? Therefore the sadhus only stay at the house only as long as it takes to milk a cow. Because whatever you have to say for their situation intellectually can be said in a very short time. Does that make sense? Longer than that, there's a good chance you get caught up in their own personal problems without necessarily any benefit. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing if you spend the time, you hear something, and then from there you're able to give direction and advice, and that's what they want, then it's worth spending that extra time. But most of the time it's just, I'm going through this, I want to share this with somebody, therefore you go through it, then I will consider that that's nice. Not that it will make any change, I'll just feel better. You know what I'm saying? Because my ego is such, I'm not forgiving that person anyway. But because I'm feeling bad at this moment right now, therefore we want you to feel bad at this moment right now. And by sharing that, then you really show your friendship. Right? That's that. Okay. Then Vinodakam. In his book Bhagavad Arkaramichi Mala, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts this verse from chapter 19 within Abhideya division, specifically assigning it to chapter 15 entitled Bhakti Anukulya Vichar, Favorable Conditions for Bhakti. Pirkat Maharaj to Sukadev Goswami. Simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Yeah, so therefore the interaction with devotees, like that, you actually even remember anything connected with devotees, then is counted in the process. And for Krishna, the process is what's important, because in the process is where you actually taste the rasa. Does that make sense? It invokes love, but the rasa is tasted in Abhideya. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's not, prayojana means this love is there, but that love is manifested through the pastime where there's an experience. And that experience of interacting with the devotees is what Krishna is interested in. Does that make sense? It should be done with love, that's the prayojana aspect. But the Abhideya is actually what he's interested in. Yeah? Okay, so then here is the homework assignments. And so appropriately is taken, and then just the, the appendix. This is the summary of the whole canto. Chapters 1 to 6, Narada and Vyasadeva. Srila Sutta Goswami begins his narrative of Srimad Bhagavatam by convincing the sages of Naimisharanya Forest that devotional service to Lord Krishna is the very essence of Dharma. His evidence of this is Srila Vyasadeva's despondency even after he finished the Mahabharata, which is still respected today as an important source for knowledge of how religion, Dharma, is to be executed. After Narad Muni arrived preaching about the soul's need to hear the glories of Sri Krishna in order for the living entity to achieve spiritual perfection by complete satisfaction of the self, Srila Vyasadeva was inspired by direct realization of the Lord and his energies, his marginal and external potencies, to write the purest of the Mahapuranas. Chapters 7 to 11, Pastimes in Hastinapur and in Dwarka. Sutta Goswami introduces us to the pastimes of the Supreme Lord by ways of events already recorded in the Mahabharata. But because Srimad Bhagavatam shows us that Arjuna, Queen Kunti, Grandfather Bhishmadev, and Maharaj Yudhishthir all plainly declare Lord Krishna to be the original and supreme personality of Godhead, the Lord's pastimes in Hastinapur and Dwarka are most relishable. As his chariot driver, Krishna helps Arjuna capture the wickedly vengeful but ultimately foolish Ashwatthama. Lord protects the Pandavas and baby Pariket from Ashwatthama's inexpert misuse of super powerful Vedic weaponry. Queen Kunti offers the Lord her moving prayers of thanks. She desires he remain in Hastinapur to continue to protect her family by his mercy. The Lord arranges for a broken-hearted Yudhishthir to be resettled in his Kshatriya Dharma by Grandfather Bhishma, who lay upon a bed of arrows and yet remained alive. At last he departed this world at a time of his own choosing, while drinking the darshan of Sri Krishna through his eyes. Responding to their eagerness for his continued association, Lord Krishna even remained a few months more in Hastinapur. At last he returned to Dwarka, where devotees of all classes and relationships with the Lord seem to get their lives back simply by his blessed appearance. Chapters 12 to 15. Departure of the Pandavas and the rule of Emperor Pariket. The birth of Maharaj Pariket, grandson of Arjuna, is a most joyous occasion for the Pandavas. His future is foretold to be glorious. Vidura, out of genuine concern for his brother, who had actually fallen under the influence of Kali, helped Dhritarashtra leave home and attain spiritual perfection. Despite his numerous transgressions of the past, when Maharaj Yudhishthira comes to know from Arjuna that Sri Krishna departed the world, the Pandavas install Pariket on the throne and depart Hastinapur for returning back home, back to Godhead. Chapters 16 to 19. The glories of Maharaj Pariket. Although still quite young, Pariket is powerful enough to halt the nefarious deeds of the personality of Quarrel, Kali, all over the planet Earth. Though Kali was promised places to abide in Pariket's kingdom, places where sinful activities are regularly performed, there actually were no such places. Kali therefore hatched a plot against the king. He entered the body of a proud, easily angered young Brahmin named Sringi, son of Samika Rishi. By Daiva or divine will, the king made an offense against the sage that even Samika did not take seriously. But the son did and used his brahminical power to curse the king in 7 days. Pariket Maharaj, though powerful enough, does not try to counter the curse. He accepts these developments as the will of the Lord and takes to severe austerities on the bank of the Ganges in order to achieve the supreme spiritual goal of life. Many sages arrive from all corners of the world and even from other planets. They unanimously are of the opinion that the foremost authority on the matters raised by Pariket Maharaj is Sukadeva Goswami. Srila Sukadeva arrives on the scene as if somewhat mad, but mad he is not. Everyone is able to see he is a Mahabhagavat of the highest order. Therefore, Maharaj Pariket redirected the questions he asked of the sages to Sukadeva Goswami. Yeah. Okay. So any questions or anything on this chapter? Or this canto, actually? Yes?
How long has Sukadeva Goswami been roaming around, and where did he go before he came to this?
That I wouldn't know. I don't know. It's but he's been around.
During the discuss, one of the discuss, you mentioned that immediately Sukadeva Goswami came out from the womb of the mother, he left home, and then he produced the shadow of the theater. So how was it possible for him to learn Bhagavata after living in the womb from yesterday?
How was he able to learn Bhagavata
from yesterday after living in the womb?
Because he's been hearing in the womb about the glories of the Lord. I mean, his father is Vyasadeva, so for 16 years he's been hearing so many things. You know, so that's there. Plus, you know, the Bhagavatam is built off the four seed verses. And he moves around, so he hears from everywhere. So it's not that these are the only chapters of 300 chapters comprised Bhagavatam. There's unlimited chapters. But at this particular rendition of the Bhagavatam, these chapters were spoken because of the particular circumstances and the questions answered. In other words, anything that involves discussions about the Lord and his devotees is Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So this is what was relevant for the time, place, and circumstance. But because of the nature of it, and the how you say the purpose of it, then it becomes very special. So it becomes famous. And Vyasadeva then documented specifically this conversation as Bhagavatam. And what we see is in the Bhagavatam, you're getting conversations from all over the universe. It's not just, you know, like that. Does that make... It's also more interesting like that. No? I mean, yeah, you could always say that, but same time as you get devotees all the way through, but you get these, yeah, you get pure devotees here, you get in the 10th canto. But I would say is because also it's the foundation. You're establishing the importance of devotees. You're establishing the need to surrender to devotees. The establishing that surrendering to Krishna is going to be beneficial, that we're not going to lose anything, and that whatever there is, whatever is right and wrong, it's judged off of its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? These are very fundamental, so you could say is everything is based off of this, because otherwise, the tendency is to think the rules and regulations are actually the devotional service rather than they're the ideal medium through which to perform the devotional service. But the service itself is the devotion. So if we lack devotion, then our devotion is wanting to please the Lord through activities that please Him, even though we may not have the attitude that the attitude itself pleases, but just that we want to do activities that do please, that is a pleasing attitude. Does that make sense? So that has to be cleared, because otherwise we'll get distracted. We don't want to follow Varnashram, but if we agree to it, then whoever's not is not actually a devotee. We're not necessarily interested in proper moral behavior. We do whatever we like. So if we accept that we'll follow it, then anybody who's not, it can't be a devotee. Like that. Or we're a devotee, so we don't follow any rules and regulations. The opposite, right? That's it. Niyamagraha has both these meanings. That either you throw out the rules because you don't understand them, which is ignorance, or they're a trouble, which is passion, or you follow them very dogmatically, either for the benefits or for, you know, how you say, the prestige, or, you know, whatever reason is there, or just the result. But the result, you know, we want to get out of here, you won't be freed from material contamination, but the actual point is to please Krishna. Right? So all these platforms are okay in the beginning. That's not a problem. But to make a strong stand on them in the long run, and that they overshadow these basic principles that are being given here in this first canto, that would be a mistake. So that's why it takes fine intelligence. Because we're saying follow Varnashram, but don't get caught up in it. You know, you should be moral and proper, but also don't get caught up in that. Engage the senses in the Lord's service, but don't yourself get overwhelmed by your senses. Right? We're following the path of liberation, but that's actually not our purpose. Right? We're trying to develop love for Krishna and do everything spiritual, but we're still dealing with the material world and mundane relationships. Right? So it takes actually great intelligence to appreciate this and to be able to apply this. Because taking one side or the other, that's easy. That's what we've done unlimited lifetimes before coming to devotional service. If you check, basically all classes of men all over the world are engaged in taking one of those positions or the other, right? But never both simultaneously, right? That's why you have differences, your groups, your quarrels, your fighting, your, right? We talk about Varnashram as one system. But those who are not used to being able to deal with contradictions take it as a caste system. And so then there's all these different things, there's all these things, and it's exploited. No, it's the body of the Lord. Right? The shudras are the feet, right? Is there some problem with the Lord's feet? Are the Lord's feet in any way considered less than his head? No. So then why in Varnashram would there be? Right? Then one may say, but then why are the Brahmins leading? Because someone has to lead. Right? Even if you have feet, they both have to go in the same direction to get somewhere. Whether each foot does what it wants. And what decides where you're going to go? Feet are going to get anywhere if you can't see where you're going? You fall in a ditch? Right? Does that make sense? So you need eyes to know where you're going. You need arms to protect you. If you're going to walk around, you need energy, so that means you need a stomach. But to walk around, you need feet. Does that make sense? So it's all part of the Lord's plan, and everybody does their part, it works. So it's seen as the Lord's body. It's one thing, even though it's all contradictory, seemingly. Right? Right? You can put things in your mouth, but you don't use your feet to eat. Right? Unless you're below 2 years old, of course, but right? Does that make sense? So, yeah. So it's very important to understand is that what we're trying to gain from the study of Bhagavatam is something that hasn't been gained in any other study anywhere. And there's no one else that can teach it to you but the devotees. Does that make sense? Because no one else in the universe can deal with all these contradictions. There isn't anyone. Only the devotees can do that. And if you want to deal with all contradictions, then only Achintabheda-Veda-Tattva. Even all schools can't deal with all the different, to accommodate everything. Because right? Krishna is the complete whole, so naturally everything is there. Vishnu only manifests 60% of the qualities. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, there's going to be less contradiction. But when you have 100%, means everything there is in the cosmic creation is represented in that 64 qualities. Therefore, you have anything that's contradictory to the other will be there contained in Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay.
Is what about forgiveness is the one important quality of the Brahman? Can you please tell us what it actually means to forgive? Sometimes we are hearing forgive and forget. It means if we just forget about then we actually
No. That is forgive means forget. We're saying forgive and forget. Forgive means that something has been done that you feel is unjust or wrong. It may be, it may not be. But you perceive it that way. And to be able to work with somebody who has done something against you, or at least be not unfavorable towards them, that would be, in other words, the ability to drop the stand of your position that you're right and they're wrong, and to be able to move on from that. Right? Forget means you don't worry about that. You know what I'm saying? If something comes up again immediately, then it's hard to forget because there's a pattern. But if something happens now and then after 3 years something happens again, you can't go, oh, you always do this. You know? Because you're supposed to forget the past. It's clean now. Now you start over again. Right? That's the forget. But if it's you know, something happens here and then later in the day or after a couple of weeks, but it's close enough that there's a pattern, then you can say this is a regular feature in the relationship. Does that make sense? So it's important. But generally it's because of attachment that we can't forgive. Because we're so attached to our position, our facilities, that if there's any loss, then that creates insecurity. So basically, your forgiveness is based on fear. So it's actually, that means envy, means impersonalism. Because if you acknowledge that they're a person, you're incensed because of the personal problem that has arisen for you because of this injustice. But when we deal with the other person, we put them in the impersonal category, the generic category. We don't consider them as a person and what they're going through and why it happened. They may not be right, but there may be cause why it might come up. Right? Just like you had nothing to do with it and they came in and started yelling at you because you happened to be, you know, sitting in the wrong place. Because somebody before came and then they made a whole mess there and that, and they've just cleaned it up and they're just having guests over and this and that, therefore. And then you could say, oh, is this, you know, this and that. But if you were in the same situation, you might do the same thing. And if you were in that situation, you would expect that they would be just and, you know, drop it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, now that you explained it, I understand. And then you'd leave it. But because you don't, therefore you yell and scream, and therefore it escalates, and then it turns into a whole thing. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Whichever side we're on, in other words, we're generally very liberal and broad-minded towards ourselves, and very, you know, conservative and strict and, you know, according to tradition and all the right and good things for everybody else. Does that make sense? But, you know, very accommodative, understanding, you know, towards our own, you know, position. So the Vedic is you should try to reverse that. Right? But in the process of reversing it, it's not a negative thing, it's just the practical. You see what are the flaws and just correct them, move on. You know, it's just like this. Let us say you walk into the kitchen and there is a dirty plate sitting there in the sink. Right? You could just walk in there, turn on the tap, wash it, rinse it off, and put it on the side. Done, right? What, 30 seconds? It's over. Or you could come in and, oh no, a dirty plate here, and there's always dirty plates here, and all day all we're doing is dirty plates, and go on and on and on and on. Right? And everybody else in the room just thinks, this could be over in 30 seconds. You know, they could just wash the plate. You know. Does that make sense? So that's how we deal with our own faults. You see it, deal with it, move on. Right? But, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so fallen, I'm so terrible, I'm so disgusting, but you notice that the primary, intransitive verb there is I. You know? That I am doing this, I am that, I am this, I am that. It's always I. You know? Excuse me, that's the noun there. There's that. But it's always, I am this. Always remember that. Whenever you're having a bad day and very depressed and feeling sorry for yourself, that the only difference between that and being puffed up is that one you're confident and one you're not. That's all. The difference between pride and this other is just, ego. I mean, it's just the manifestation of the ego in confidence or not confident. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else?
Because of the election, you mentioned that unless one get to prima, what can I get out of this material?
And
Prabhupada was mentioning one purport that all the devotees should try as much as possible to come to Ashakti. If you just come to Ashakti, then you can go to the spiritual world. Uh-huh. So I don't know if we can explain something about it.
Okay. The question, the doubt is that the Ashakti that we said that until you get to prema, you can't get out of the material world. But Prabhupada had mentioned the devotion endeavor to get to Ashakti, and it, by getting there, then you'll get out of the material world. I only mention the point of prema because of the popular notion that Goloka is the spiritual world exclusively. End statement, end sentence, end point. And Gokul is actually not the spiritual world. Right? Even though if I state it like this, no devotee will say that that's how I think. But in practicalness, they do. Right? You take the point of the fall of the jiva. Right? Big argument. Why? Because both parties are taking it that you fall down from Goloka. But the Tathasta Shakti is not manifest there. Tathasta Shakti is manifest here. We're Tathasta Shakti. That, and Tathasta Shakti means you have the choice whether you pick spiritual or material. So where do you see the full spiritual and full material at the same place at the same time, other than in Gokul? You understand that? There is no discussion or argument over where the jiva came from. But this argument, you know, is alive and smoldering today because of this devotee's Goloka is the spiritual world and Gokul is not. That's all. You want to have even more fun is in bhava, you are in your spiritual body, but it doesn't mean you go back to Godhead. Right? You have to develop prema to be eternally situated there. Right? So you can be in your spiritual body at bhava. That's what it means. You have your spiritual form. But you're still contaminated by the association of the material world. You see? So that's my point is, if you can't understand that I deal with material energy, see its potency and connection to Krishna, and therefore I work on the platform of Naishkarmya, where I'm simultaneously dealing with the spiritual material at once, how are you going to accommodate these concepts? You know, we're just talking about using your car and that. How are you going to, what about the mind and other things like that? Spiritual world, right? You know, devotees will say, you can't fall from the spiritual world. Why? Because there's no envy there. So you're going to tell me when Aristasura and all that came into Vrindavan, they came in pure love of God? Those guys were envy, nasty, personified. And they're right there in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. Right? I'm not making these things up. I'm quoting devotees. You know what I'm saying? So that's my point, is that intellectually we accept the whole philosophy. There's basically nothing in our philosophy we don't accept, generally. But when it comes down to the practical, the cultural and the practical application of it, sometimes we don't connect the two. And because of that, then we run into problems. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So Ashakti means then you'll get into Gokul and you'll have your spiritual form. But if you don't value the association of devotees, you can stay on that platform for, the Acharyas mention, I think it's hundreds or thousands. Raghavart Machandika, he says hundreds or thousands between Shravan, I mean Smaranadasa and Apandas. Do you remember? I can't remember. He says hundreds or thousands. You can get stuck there. If you think, I am a great devotee and I am advanced, you get stuck. Right? Because I am a great devotee means I think I am the devotee. And I am advanced means I think I'm God. So it's impersonal that we're still thinking I'm God or his devotee. Which means it's still the primordial sin of I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Right? So that's its subtlest form. You know, that's for us, for the you know, yogis, and it's I think I'm the super soul. You know, but for us is I think I'm the devotee. Like that. But we're not the devotee. We're the devotee of the devotee. We'll never be the devotee, because there's only one devotee, that's Radharani. Rupa Goswami says that in Nectar Devotion. There's only one devotee in the cosmic creation, that's her. Everybody else is her devotee. Right? There are various pastimes, so that's brought out, where actually then Jatila, Kotila, and Abhimanyu, then they reveal that actually we're great devotees of Radharani, but for the pastime, then therefore we take on this role. Chandravali also, she says that, you know, Radharani's the best, but, you know, to bring out her bestness, then I play my part. Like that. So that's pastimes. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
In the assembly, when Parikshit was about to join, Vyasadeva was there. Why couldn't he answer the question? Why did they wait for such a
time? Why couldn't he answer? He could answer. But at the same time, is that here you're getting it from someone who is not discriminating. See, it's just like this. You're discriminating between the various elements in the material world for the living entity's upliftment. You might overemphasize that. Or when you're transcendentally situated, there, that's your position you're, you know, looking from. Then you'll emphasize that more. You know what I'm saying? It's just like when Sukadeva Goswami runs by the girls and Vyasadeva runs by. And then, you know what I'm saying? Is that it's not that he's not advanced, it's just that he's taken the position of discerning between one thing and another. While Sukadeva is taken, in his discernment, he's only seeing Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Means he can tell the difference between the path and the trees, because you don't hear the bumping into them and falling into the water and tripping over the, you know, the rocks. And he can tell the difference, but he sees them all as different aspects of Krishna. Well, Vyasadeva is, he can, you know, he knows they're all different aspects of Krishna, but when you're going to deal with them, you have to use this various elements and culture and dharma to do it, so that you can free yourself from the material world. You know, so he's generally presenting naishkarmya, but because most people don't want naishkarmya, then it's given in such a way that you could apply it as sakam. Right? But Sukadeva doesn't bother with either of that. Right? He presents people who are in that position, but he's only presenting it for the purpose of bhakti. You know, so in his position, naturally, that would work. You know? And two, it's that he's obviously special. You know, because Vyasadeva will be taken as one school. So there may be six schools represented there. But Sukadeva, it's obvious he's not within the schools, he's beyond the schools. You know what I'm saying? He's completely transcendental. so that automatically then everybody would respect him, even though Vyasa could say it, but the other sages may not accept his authority because they have their own schools. But Sukadeva they'll take us beyond. Yeah. It's also Krishna's arrangement that they accepted that way. So that means they also got the Lord's mercy that they were able to accept, because it mentions that someone who can accept is, then gets the Lord's mercy. It means it's a symptom that they have. So the Lord must be very kind to all those personalities there. Because Pariksit Maharaj's desire, he wanted a consensus. Right? So therefore the Lord fulfilled his desire and created one. Is that okay? Anything else?
What does it mean when Dhritarashtra brought perfection?
Perfection is another term for liberation. Perfection means you are freed from material contamination, but it doesn't mean you've gone to the spiritual world. Anybody, these, 1 second, these books, the second canto, have they been given out or not? Are you registered, Haribol Prabhu? Are you a registered student? Okay, then don't worry about it. Do you have them here? Okay, because I'm just thinking, is because we'll start from Monday there, so it might be good to arrange and give them out now. And so to register students in that, you take the books and work it out with him. And Monday we'll start second canto, first chapter. Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here and then Jai Ho Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaur. All glory.
I mentioned it, because
that's the end of the, because they never did the 19th chapter. So that's the.
Once I took Satyavanaya course, he described Mr. Sukadeva Goswami and Vasudeva teaching him in a quite different way. He was saying that Sukadeva Goswami basically he left, he was in the force as an Navabuddha, but still was like a personalist level. Mm-hmm. So it seems that Vyasadeva arranged for people to go in the forest and utter Bhagavatam verses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you could put the fish there, bait.
Yeah.
And some scholars identify different verses, especially the verse in which Uddhava says that who can be more merciful than Krishna, that even Uddhava went to kill him and she became elevated as a nurse. And so basically, how he described is that these people were going out and giving these verses.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he heard, mm-hmm. realized, and then he ran after these people. It's like, give me more, and then he wanted to just
It's used because you have what's called Kalpa-Beta. Because it's like in the Mahabharata, that story there of Pariksit is not this Pariksit. Yeah. It's not this manifestation. Because
Mahabharata.
Yeah, because you see there, he doesn't sit down on the bank and listen to the Bhagavatam. He builds a fort that only has one entrance. It's on a stilt, one pillar. It has only one entrance to get in. There's no windows, nothing in it. You can only get in through that door. And he has guards there. So therefore Takshaka would not be able to get inside there. Like that. So Takshaka has to, you know, cheat and become like a bug on the fruit. Like that. So then so out of fear he built that. So it's a different manifestation. And there he's showing the Kshatriya and, you know, how all those kind of things there. You know, and then you see, you know, how you know, material energy, you know, works whether we like it or not. You know, it still goes through, the curse was pronounced, you're not getting out of it, so like that. But this time, then he reacts differently. So you get, because in a day of Brahma, you get 1,000 Kali Yugas.
So you're saying this is also different manifestations?
I would say so. So that's there, because they have the element that he made an extension that went back and stayed at home. But that extension would learn from Vyasadeva, but since it's him, he would know it anyway without being there. You also have that element. So, you know, so there may be so many. So all these are bona fide, these stories, you know, because they... you know, because we have questions that may or may not actually be important, but we have them, you know, so therefore then there's an answer to them. Puranas always have answers to them, so there's something somewhere.
What about this movie? It's very common in this country. I don't remember Prabhupada mentioning, I don't mind them. This Sukadeva Goswami is actually Srimati Radharani's parrot.
There's Sukh and Sari. There are always Sukh and Sari. Sukh and Sari. That's the name of the two parents. Sukh is the male and Sari is the female. It works with the Acharyas. You probably go with the Lilamrita, Ujjvala Nilamani. They talk about those two parents, you know, in the pastimes. But the connection you'd probably find in Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika. Or Gorgon and Deepika, or the combination between them, because all the different things are talked there. So it's, you know, so references are given for that, because that's what he does. He speaks. They're very expert. They always, I mean, that's what they'll do, is they'll call them over and then they'll speak the pastimes. But because they're parents, they can be in the kunj. No one else can be in the kunj, so they can see everything and hear everything. So then they'll go out and they'll talk about it, you know, amongst themselves, and then the devotees can hear it, like that. So as far as, you know, seeing and hearing the Lord's pastimes, that's what he does. You know, that's his service. So naturally then he would be the perfect one to speak, you know, Krishna's pastimes, 10th canto, because he's seen it. He's the parrot. He's there. He's there. Because parrots can go at all times, you know. Others are restricted. They can only be there at their time. You know, Nasta Kali Aliva, you know, sometimes it's cowherd boys, sometimes, you know, the family, Mother Yashoda, and sometimes it's the gopis. But the parrots can be there for all of them. You know, there's no restriction on them. So generally in these things it doesn't matter. You just take one of them, you say it, and then everybody be quiet. Just like the where the soul come from, you know, where they fall from. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say they fell from Brahman, and then you stop. You know, that's it. You say that, the mundane mind can grasp onto it, and the question's answered. Nobody asks, well, what aspect of Brahman? Because we just think Brahman, Brahma Jyoti. That's where that came from. That's where Prabhupada would make the statement that being in the Brahman is already a fallen situation, so you can't say that you fell from there, because you're already fallen. Fallen means you come from a place that's not fallen and to a place that is fallen. So the soul, for a jiva to be floating in the Brahman, is already fallen. The personal platform is already a fallen position. But you know, Maharaj the other day was explaining about the Vasudev Sattva. Means when the pradhan is there, and it's a, you know, the living entities and time and ego are implanted inside. It's mahatattva. It's actually considered as Brahman. You're still transcendental, but you have material inclination. So that's the position you come from when you come into the material world, because no one said where you fell from. No one said where did you necessarily originally fall from, because who can calculate it? So this manifestation in this universe now, everybody was put into Vasudev Sattva, into that place, into the pradhan, the mahatattva, and then from there Brahma does the secondary creation, and then you're placed into where you go here. So you fall from that position to here. And you do that every universe. You know, so that's another way you could take fell from Brahman. Like that. So it means this, and so the point is that the whole cosmic creation is Brahman. There is no anything else that's not Brahman. It's only we think this is material, this is spiritual. But actually, you know, this rock, this is Brahman. It's just inferior Brahman, but it's still Brahman. You know? So it's just to understand those things, you wouldn't ask that question. Since the question is asked, means you won't necessarily understand those things. So that's why it says they're not compatible. All the acharyas say, don't worry about it, don't even bother discussing it. When we went to do research with ask the Madhvas and the Shris and the Embarkas, they said our acharyas forbade us from discussing this. So if you want to present what you know, you guys talk about, we're willing to listen. You know, if there's any way we can help, we'll make a comment. But otherwise, we don't have a stand because our acharyas said don't bother. But it all goes back basically to this point of not being able to appreciate that Gokul is non different from Goloka. And in Gokula, you have the material and spiritual in the same place. You have those on prema and those who are not on prema. So you have everything there. So that's the place where you can see Krishna and either become, you know, permanently part of the pastimes, or see Krishna and not be so interested and get distracted by the material energy. Right? So one party rightly, how you say, presents that you can't fall from Goloka, which is true. Theoretically, you could, but Krishna won't ever allow it. Like Jayan Vijay, you know, it's mentioned in the purport that Krishna, before an offense happens, he'll come in between it and make sure it doesn't. So theoretically, you could, technically, you could fall, but no one ever does because Krishna won't allow it to happen. You know? So Jiva Goswami says no one falls from Goloka, which is true. But they miss the point that what we're talking about, the fall of the divas, when we talk about the spiritual world, we're talking about Gokul. And the other party is right in that they stand on Prabhupada saying that we fell from the spiritual world. Because for him, Gokul is the spiritual world. So they're right in supporting the Acharya, even though they technically also don't know the details. So both parties are not fully aware of the details. One has faith in the Acharya, one has faith in their intelligence. So therefore, of the two, the party that was saying we became jealous, we were with Krishna and we fell, they're the right, correct party, because they actually are in line with the Acharya. But if you want to get technical, then they're also not fully understanding the point, because they're not distinguishing. The reason the argument's there is because they don't distinguish between Gokul and Goloka.
But if I can ask, isn't more of a psychological or perhaps an ego platform that they understand what the Acharya was? The same Acharya also wrote that nobody falls from the spiritual world.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But one claims...
that's why it was contradictory.
Both claim allegiance to the Acharya. So
yes, but the point is
one is more
the difference is that Rupa Goswami says you approach the previous Acharya through your Acharya.
No, I'm saying Sri Prabhupada himself.
Yeah, but my point is, since they're accepting Srila Prabhupada, he does make the other statement also. So, yeah, so they're only accepting one statement and not the other.
That is not a both could be having the same...
Okay. If you want to take that, then you could say yes. But then, bottom line is the one party standing on because Prabhupada said it, and the other party standing on because Jiva Goswami said it.
But maybe there are many more parties than I'm aware of.
No, but the ones that write the books about, you know, leaves don't fall off the trees of Vaikuntha, that even shows that they don't even know pastimes, because the leaves do fall off the trees. When Krishna leaves, they become in separation, that the leaves all fall off, because they say even in Vaikuntha, a leaf doesn't even fall in Vaikuntha, let alone the leaf doesn't fall, how would the leaves fall?
Visualizing those who are, you know, still in Eskons, still active, still considered good standing.
Yeah, but they're getting their arguments from these parties. Because the Gaudiya Math takes the thing of the Brahman. That's where it came in from. It means they went over to talk to Sridhar Maharaj, and then Rameshwar asked Sridhar Maharaj about it. And so he just take their stand. So then Rameshwar started professing that. So that's how that got into the society. They want to know the history. And then from there, then our Jiva Institute, Wallace and Vrindavan, you know, who you mentioned, they're the ones that take the strong stand that even Prabhupada's not right.
I was not right.
Yeah. Because they're not that who you mentioned. He's not in our line. They're Gadadhar line, Goswamis.
Yeah, oh, perhaps.
What I'm saying is
different things.
No, but you mentioned that Satyanarayan.
Yeah, that was.
No, but I'm saying that Satyanarayan is the one that writes the book that those who take this stand get their arguments from.
Well, I also have the direct experience of seeing people that just take as they, because obviously philosophy is all samanvaya.
So the point is, if you can't put the two together, then don't bother discussing it. If it's Prabhupada said you don't fall from the spiritual world, but he says you're with Krishna and you became envious, where is that place where you're not in the spiritual world but you're with Krishna and you could get envious? That's my point. There's only one place. And that's Gokul. It's not another. This is duality. I'm talking about where do you put the two together? Because if you can't synthesize the two, you haven't understood the Acharya. And if you take one Acharya statement against another Acharya, it means you've misunderstood the Acharya.
No, for me, see, I was just talking about Shri Prabhupada.
My point is Prabhupada's made both these statements.
Yeah, that's
so. Therefore, how are you going to reconcile these?
That's my point.
So that's my point is, if you understand the technology of how the cosmic creation works, the only place in that is where you're with Krishna, but is not technically beyond the Viraja in the way of physical placement that we would call the spiritual world, because Prabhupada's saying there, you don't fall the spiritual world means from the Vaikuntha planets, you don't fall from there, but you can fall from Gokul. Right? And the only place where you can be with Krishna and fall is in Gokul. Does that make sense? So therefore, both statements are correct. But you have to see what is the context in which he's using it. Then you understand whether he's talking about Gokul and Golok. The devotees just take it automatically. When you say spiritual, it means Goloka. That's why I say the discussion comes up. If it's understood that it's also Gokul, there is no discussion. It doesn't come up because, you know, people fall from Gokul all the time. It means that Krishna is right there asking the Brahmins, the yogic Brahmins, for food, and they're interested in their yajnas. They're right there in the spiritual world with Krishna, and they're distracted by karmakanda. Their wives are not. Their wives come out and they bring all the food and they surrender to Krishna. And the husbands see, yes, they're more advanced than us. So it's all going on in Gokul. That's the point, is the full material and the full spiritual going on in the same place. That's the Tathasta Shakti. That's what holds it together. Tathasta Shakti, that's what it does, is it brings the two together. Because we become absolute by being in the fire of the eternal potency. That's why that example is given. Because we'll always be Tathasta Shakti. But we're in the fire of the internal potency, therefore we act like fire. You know, and when we're overwhelmed by Maya, we act like Maya. That's just the nature. We don't become internal potency. We will be in the fire, but because it's in the fire, the resident spiritual world don't make a distinction. The internal potency doesn't think, you know, oh, this is a jiva, and I'm internal potency, so I'm superior. No, it's the fire is the same, so they don't make any distinction. And tattva here, for explaining so we can tell the difference, is brought out, but in practical application, no difference is made. You know, we'll even take Rupa Goswami is more prominent than, you know, someone like Chandravali. You know, she's internal potency. She becomes Rukmini in Dwarka, so she's not, you know, no small timer. You know, so you have Sri Bhu and Nila, so these are, you know, big time Shaktis. But he's a jiva, but he's more prominent than she is. Mm-hmm. like that. So that, they just don't make these distinctions. We make the distinctions, but they don't make the distinctions. So all these things make sense, you know. You put them together, that, because then it's understood. Because the thing is, it's understand. There's so many things to pull together. Therefore, it's very you can't just easily answer the question. Does that make some sense or no?
My doubt was, was very circumscribed,
mm-hmm.
to the point that I understood you made that between the two parties, four bodies, non-four bodies. The four bodies should have been considered perhaps more loyal to Srila Prabhupada. But my understanding and experience is that, rather observation, that there are at least some that just get the idea of non-four back to Srila Prabhupada. So that was my doubt. It's very circumscribed point.
Same social, but it's social, but it's come in from outside. Because otherwise, previously to that, it wasn't really...
Well, I don't know, because I didn't make a study of each support and where they can be.
The point is, if they can't put the two together, if the Prabhupada personally tells the devotees about Krishna as becoming envious of him and therefore falling down, then that's something to be considered. It can't be put on the side. So that's the answer he gives to the devotees. Then in the books, he's mentioning that you don't fall from the spiritual world. One is, find that in which purport and what is the circumstance under which it's being discussed, and see what it's relating to, what it's meaning there. And then two is, why can't that one be absorbed in this one? That's my point.
Dialectics. That's why.
That's my point. But it's, I would say it's duality, because achinta bheda bheda tattva, it means two seeming contradictory things can be perfectly reconciled. If one can't acknowledge that, then we should try vishishta dvaita, vishuddha dvaita, dvaita dvaita, or Vishuddha, Vishuddha, Dvaita, Dvaita, and no, not a Dvaita, and Dvaita, because those are very, just keep one line very clear, very simple. So if we're not willing to accommodate that, there's two seemingly completely contradictory things, but they perfectly reconciled, then it's a problem, because that's our philosophy. Does that make sense? Krishna's back is irreligion. All funky, nasty, disgusting as things that go on come from Krishna's back. But Krishna's the supreme pure, so how does that happen? Krishna is all light, so how does Maya come about? Right? So, therefore, if we can't accommodate those, then how do we do? You know what I'm saying? Like that.
So you're saying that to be legitimate as Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva approach, it has to be harmonizing both.
Means, in other words, you don't take Prabhupada said this, no, but Prabhupada said that. The point is Prabhupada said both. So then use your intelligence rather than trying to prove one or the other, trying to find what's the commonality between the two so that they both are true. That's my point.
Yes.
That's the point. It's simple. That's it.
I agree.
Okay. So that's all. That's why I say you shouldn't have two parties based off of what Prabhupada said. Because Prabhupada said both means they both have application. And so there's a common point between them. If I say, this water is hot, no, the water is cold. But temperature is the common point. The water is the common point. But depending upon what you're comparing it to, you call it cold and you call it hot. Like the pump water, we'll call it warm. But those from the temple will call it cold. Like that. Oh, you take bath in cold water. It's actually quite warm. It steams when it comes out of the pump. So if you live outside and the air is cold, when you put that water on, it feels warm. If you're in a warm room and you come outside, then you feel cold. You know, but so the common point is then you have to find what's common. Is the element of temperature and water, and then find out what that is. So depending upon the application, then you'll apply it. So if it's a matter of you're bathing from a pump, then it's not. And if you're bathing in the, does that make any sense or anything?
Yeah.
Means, in other words, you're trying to find what makes them both work. But this isn't sentimental. I'm talking about technically, metaphysically explaining it, scientifically explaining it. Sentimentally, you can say, oh, no, it's all right, Prabhupada said, and just, that's okay, but then it'll come up again. It needs to be, you scientifically explain it, and then it works.
Yeah, perhaps, I mean, on a technical level, it's a question of which one is qualitatively like including the other, in the sense, I'll give another example. Forget about the fall and not fall. Say, those Upanishads say, you know, Arupam, and the other Upanishad, no, the other Arupam actually is really brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
So, definitely, we need some Anvaya, and in our line, we take the Rupam, in one sense, as superior.
Yeah.
Because the arupam is an expression of the rupam.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't be arupa. You have to use form to explain that there is none.
Yeah.
There's
so
not a separate term.
It's not that there's an original primordial arupa Brahman, and then some condensation of that becomes rupa.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, in one sense, yeah, some Anvaya both exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one is the basis of other.
Other, yeah. So that's
so,
the point. Is
yeah,
that
that
we are with Krishna, we fall. That's the that you're with Krishna and you fall, that would be the prominent one. But you can't fall from the spiritual world. That would be the side one.
Yeah, that's what Srila Prabhupada says exactly.
Yeah.
The letter, we're always with Krishna.
Yeah, so that's the point. This means, and this is a simplistic presentation, because when you actually get into it, Mahavishnu and the causal ocean and all that, the causal ocean is actually Jamuna. It's an expansion of Jamuna. So it's actually spiritual. You know, because the Lord's not going to lay down on anything. You know, see, in the material world, He fills up the Garbhodak ocean as His own sweat. So it's like, you know, it's like, it's not ordinary. So you get all these subtle things, because we're talking about what's manifest here, you know, within the realm of Garbhodak Shai Vishnu. But there's this whole subtlety of what's going on in Karana Dakshay Vishnu. That'll come up in the second canto. Because when they describe the creation, it gets a lot back into these two, they're simultaneously happening. These reflections between what's going on in the big and what's going on in the small. And it's just like when you go into deep sleep, like that, where you're unconscious, you actually go back and merge into the Lord. That's why you get refreshed and rejuvenated. Then as soon as you become conscious, you're immediately back here. So the scriptures talk about that, but it's not necessarily very clear. They always talk about when he sleeps, everybody sleeps and merges into him. So then you're thinking, well, that means in the, you know, the big disillusion, when he breathes back, Mahavishnu breathes back in. But it also applies with Garbhodak Shai Vishnu. It also applies with Kirodak Shai Vishnu. You know, so like that, you know, because Super Soul is right there. You know, it's not far to go. It's not that. Then we'll think, oh, I travel all the way. No, he's right there in the heart. So it's just that, you know, one merges in and out, you know, because he's on our cycle, so in night he'll sleep, so when he's, we sleep. Like that. So it's there's all these subtle things that are happening all at once. You take Vasudev, Shankar, Shampujumna, and Aniruddha. They're all four different aspects of the same thing that are all happening simultaneously. You know. But at the same time, you can say one comes from the other. You can say Shankarsham comes from Vasudev, Pujumna comes from Shankarsham, and Aniruddha comes from Pujumna. But at the same time, as they're all going on at the same, you know, once, you know, it's there, but, you know, those manifestations of one after the other, you know, happened eternally. But at the same time, they say, are constantly going on now, the expansions in the past times. So it goes into a realm that's beyond our intelligence. You know, that's the difficulty. So you can only take actually a portion of it and go back technically as far as you need to go that the intelligence is satisfied, because beyond that there's so much more. You know, it's like Madhvacharya, he was doing the translations to Vishnu Sahasranam. So he gave one meaning to all the 1,000 words, and he went back and gave another meaning. He did this for 40. After 40 meanings, then his disciples just said, that's it, we can't handle it anymore. Otherwise he was going to give 108. You know? So it's like there's a limit to what we can accommodate. So, you know, this is more simple. Also, you see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in that Brahman and Vaishnava, I think it's in the 90s there, he talks about how the living entity falls. Basically, he makes a point of indifference. It is either you're attracted to Krishna and you move forward, or if you're indifferent, then you will fall. It's not that you can remain indifferent. That's the point. It's the tattva can't remain just in the middle. It's got to be this side or that. It's got to be under the influence of the internal or the external. That's its nature. So if you're indifferent, then you fall.
And perhaps there's an interesting thing which also connects with what you were saying in the class, how the spiritual world is full of devotees.
Yeah.
That Prabhupada says actually Vasudeva is Krishna alone.
Yeah.
So it seems that it's like really, in other words, it's just connecting what you're saying and the spiritual world being chock full of devotees.
Yeah, yeah.
And Vasudeva being alone, actually.
Because he's alone, because that's what we see. But at the same time, behind it, he has a whole thing like Mahavishnu is there alone. But when Arjuna goes with Krishna to visit, he comes and meets him on the steps of the palace, and he's got all the servants and everything. So
alone in the sense of
there is an element where he is perceived alone. But Krishna is never perceived alone. He's always surrounded by devotees. That's one of the qualities. He's always surrounded by loving devotees. Well, Vishnu, he does have that element where he's perceived alone. As Paramatma, he's alone, or, you know, that element is alone. But factually for him, he's got all his associates there, and it's all happening. But what we perceive is not. Because you see, the yogis only perceive that, you know, how you say, you know, like that, Vasudeva alone. Then if they decide to be a devotee, then they'll perceive the devotees, and then, you know, go
like
on
a
like
facade.
That. Yeah, yeah, just like that. You know, it's like work. You know, the judge comes up, sits at the bench alone, and everything like that. But after the thing, they go in the back, and him and all the lawyers and all that probably laugh and joke and drink. You know. Okay. Yeah, you wanted to discuss something. What do you want to discuss? What do you want to ask? In the school.
It's not important if they were set in the school.
No, what I'm just saying is, when you say do service means?
Mm-hmm.
Do service means? Oh, I see. Okay. Where are you from?
Slovenia.
Slovenia. How's your English?
Well, I can understand everything in the
pronunciation. So, I'm saying from the books there's no problem?
Yeah, from the
books. Okay. Like that. Where's he from? He's from Bulgaria. Yeah, so Hutchmar should come back today. You can maybe come by, you know, this, what's his name? The Brahmachari?
Jagannath Mishra.
Jagannath Mishra, you know Jagannath Mishra?
No.
May you come tomorrow and see if you can find him, and then maybe you can contact Sotamar, if there's something you can do for the month, you know, like that, because he's working on, but you know, that means you have to stay wherever you're staying. It's just that he's doing some work in the books. Maybe that. Something else? I mean, what's the purpose of saying something about yourself? That works on just by hearing like that, and then see what it does. Otherwise we don't have a club as such. Yeah, you come over and try to find Jagannath Mishra like that, and then maybe meet Sahotramar and see if there's anything you can do with him. Because when you yawn, then ghosts can go into the mouth. So when you snap the fingers, then it scares them off. They don't like the sound of snapping fingers. Mm-hmm. Snapping fingers are sharp claps, you know, like that. They don't like those.
Do you know the reference
for this? I'm not sure. I know it's there in Ramli, though. Hanuman then wanted to, after the battle, you know, after the war, then, the, you know, it's peacetime, so he wanted something to do. So I think he asked him, no one to give him anything to do because they're all very busy. I mean, he's a monkey, you know. He's, you know, monkeys don't belong in palaces. So, therefore, then I think he went to Sita, and Sita said, okay, there's one service nobody does, is that they snap the fingers in front of Ram's mouth when he yawns. So then Hanuman went and jumped up on the side somewhere, you know, and sat there. And as soon as Ramachandra yawned, and he jumped down and started snapping his fingers. But because that's his only service, he wouldn't stop. And because he was offering it, then Ram couldn't, you know, not accept it. So then everyone started getting worried because they're thinking he's just doing one long continuous yawn. You know, not that he's yawning. I mean, he started to yawn, but because of the service of Hanuman, therefore he has to keep yawning to reciprocate that. So after many hours later, and physicians and everything, then they figured out that it was because Hanuman snapping his fingers. So they got him but he wouldn't stop because he says, it's my service. You know, it's like, I don't have anything else to do, so this is what I'm doing for Ram. So they said, okay, we'll give you something else. Stop snapping your fingers. So they did, and I think it was funny. So, like that. But what is the reference? Just like that. The other thing is just cover your mouth. That's another thing you can do.
This story is not found in
the life. No, these would be probably Uttara and other things like that. There's so many Ramayans written. There's the main Ramayana, Valmiki's Ramayana. Then there's the Uttara Ramayana, which is up to when everybody's leaving. Then that's about Lav and Kush mainly. But then there's the Ananda Ramayana and this and that. There's quite a few. Adbhuta Ramayana. All the amazing things that happened in Ram's Lila, or all the happy things that happened in Ram's Lila. So these were all written by disciples of Valmiki. Because Valmiki would tell the stories, and he wrote Ramayana, but his disciples wrote all these other things.
So that was in Uttara?
I'm not sure which one that would be in.
So it's, okay, another reference. I know this explanation, but the devotees would ask me for the reference. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, no, I'm saying that's just, we're giving that, but Technically, I mean, I'm not sure. We'd have to check where that's from.
Yeah, okay. Another thing, another question is, like, sometimes I've seen some devotees, when they pay obeisances, full dandava, they would cross their legs or something.
It's a gross manifestation of a subtle point.
What does it mean?
It comes from, in Manasamhita, then it mentions when the disciple offers obeisances to the guru, then he touches his right foot with his right hand and his left foot with his left hand. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now, how does somebody stand? They stand with their feet like this, or their feet like this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're a martial artist doing the horse stance, maybe like this. But if they're not, you're walking up and you stop, your feet are going to be this far apart. So that means when you offer your obeisances, your hands will be crossed maybe that much. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or even less. Because if you're just touching the toes, the big toes are this far apart. Or if you're touching the feet, that's all. But because it's a religious thing, and religion always you have to ritualize, therefore they'll go down and offer basis and go like that. But who keeps their feet that far apart? You'll see no one in any sampradaya do this. The Ramanujas, what they do is they cross their thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
A little more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
But we like things, we're Westerners, we like things, you know, so therefore it can, like that, you know, if you have to put your feet that far apart.
Over-emphasis.
Yeah.
And the last question for today, what are the benefits of wearing those wooden sannyasi shoes?
What are the benefits of wearing wooden sannyasi shoes? One of the primary benefits is generally, unless they're brand new, no one steals them. Very beneficial. You ever lost, you know, buy a new pair of shoes and lose in the same day?
Mm.
Yeah, so then. Yeah, well, that's there you have to be sometimes more. That's why it's, if you do wear them, it shouldn't be new. Brahmacharis steal them if they're new. Two, they keep your back straight, so that makes the mind peaceful. Three, it goes to the nerves that help retain semen.
That's the part that goes between the thumb and
the... Yeah, because the nerve starts at the tip here, goes down to that point, and then goes up through the ankle, because these places are also connected to the
mm-hmm.
prostrate and all that, and then go up, then go into the genital, then up to the head.
So by pressing that nerve.
Yeah, it does something. They're good for the eyes.
Yeah.
They help eyesight. Yeah. Yeah, about 3 weeks. Can talk to him. Yeah, not exactly.
Who's doing these wooden shoes for Panchatattva? Was it him? Or
I think that was Tulsi Vallabha.
Tulsi Vallabha. And other people?
I wouldn't know.
No, okay. No problem. Inquire. Okay. I have a whole list of questions about what might be good for another 5 months.
So. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, something? Or just see? I'll just see. Okay. Okay.
Actually, I'm
expecting
just a moment. I've been practicing a form of communication called nonviolent communication,
uh-huh.
and I'm sharing it with many devotees in the community.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hearing you speak. theological points and points about the mind in reference to Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to present the book that I'm working from to you to catch my breath a little bit see if you might be interested in going over it and giving me some advice on what I'm sharing with the devotees. It seems very practical, some of the points, like the first points in it that are important, and it helps us to have discernment on criticism and judgment,
mm-hmm.
and to avoid criticizing and judging others.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of practices inside of the book that are practical that can be applied to what I see my spiritual life. Important.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave, I gave one copy to David and he read it and he had the copy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right now there's about 20 devotees that I'm sharing it with.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
So there's a lot of devotees now in the community that are practicing.
Very good.
I'd like to get some feedback from you.
Okay.
Maybe I could give a book to Kriti or David and they could give it to you.
Yeah. Okay.
A little bit nervous beginning. I don't know why, but okay. Just kind of thought so.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you're the copy power man, huh?
I actually wanted to ask, it seems quite simple that, you know, if you explain it, one can fall from Gokula. And then, but the problem arises because that's not specifically stated in Shastra, so you kind of think, well, why is it not just said?
Because still, then there'd be a cause, well, how did we get there? You know what I'm saying? They just go on and on and on. Because it's a question of time and space. And questions of time and space can't answer spiritual questions.